Welcome to Crime Suit Podcast. I'm your host, Kaylee Carter.
And I'm Hannah.
And this week, we'll be discussing the disappearance of Sarah Stern and how you can't always trust your friends. In December 2016, Sarah Stern was a 19-year-old who lived in Neptune City, New Jersey, with her dad, Michael Stern. Sarah's mom passed away from cancer in 2013, when she was only 15 at the time. Sarah attended Brookdale Community College, where she studied arts and TV production. She also worked at a pizza place to support herself, but ended up cutting her hours to one day a week so she could put in time at an art studio. She was a brilliant artist and dreamed of moving to Canada to pursue an art career. I'm not sure what's in Canada for artists, but yeah. Sarah lived with her dad in her childhood home, but it sounds like Michael Stern traveled for work a lot and he lived in Florida for extended business stays. There were also rumors that Sarah and her father had a bit of a strenuous relationship, but after looking into it, it doesn't sound like it was anything more than most teenagers experience. She disagreed with her dad politically, but they were still on speaking terms and had a good relationship otherwise. So this was like 2016, like when Donald Trump was running for president and it was, tensions were high politically, so.
Oh my gosh, that makes so much sense that this is.
So she, yeah.
That she's talking about a strenuous relationship with her father in 2016. Okay, we were all there.
Yeah.
Two, she's talking about wanting to move to Canada.
Yep.
She was like, I'm out.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Okay, this all makes sense, okay.
Sarah had two very close friends who she had known since childhood, Liam McCaskey and Preston Taylor. They all had graduated from Neptune High School in 2015, just a year prior to when this took place. Liam and Sarah hung out almost daily, even while they were juggling jobs and college classes. A former high school classmate of the group, Leanna Ross, described the trio as a model best friend group. They were inseparable. Liam had introduced Preston to Sarah in high school, and Preston took her to prom. It sounds like Preston and Sarah knew of each other and became closer in high school, but Liam and Sarah had always known each other, like since elementary school. In 2013, shortly after Sarah's mother passed away from cancer, Sarah found a shoebox of cash and her mother's things at her family's beach house. Sarah rifled through it, coming to the conclusion that there must have been close to $100,000 inside. The bills were all badly damaged, so they weren't immediately spendable. Sarah returned to her home and stashed it away. So I saw information that said Liam had actually been with Sarah when she found the money, but I also saw information that said Sarah first told Liam about the money sometime in 2016. I'm not sure which is true. Sarah ended up putting most of this cash in a safety deposit box at a bank in town.
Okay, hold on. When you first read through this, I thought you said $10,000?
No.
But it's $100,000.
That is what she thought. At first, they were okay, right.
But $100,000, how would that even fit in a shoebox?
I don't know. So I guess all of the bills were like broken.
How
and
many $100 bills would that be? So that would really be 1,000 $100 bills.
That could fit in a shoebox. Right? Yeah, that could
Did
definitely.
Do my math right? 100 times 1,000, 100,000.
Girl, I don't know.
I can do math.
I just live here.
So it's 1,000. Like, because that's the highest it goes, right?
Yeah.
There's only $100 bills,
yeah,
right?
I just
Does
did
it
the
go
math.
Higher than that?
No.
Is there a $500 bill?
If they're making $500 bills, I've never seen one. But that's not really surprising.
I probably never will.
Yeah.
Okay, that's just insane to me. $100,000. Okay, keep going, yeah. Sorry.
But they were all crumbly, and so she couldn't, like, spend them and, you know. So, and she was also, like, around 15 at the time, so... that she discovered this. So our story officially begins with frantic texts from Michael Stern to his daughter on December 2nd, 2016. Sarah, are you up? Sarah, what's going on? Grandma's trying to get in touch with you. Why is your phone off? Call me when you get this message. Call me as soon as you get this message. The last message was sent in all capital letters to get his daughter's attention, Michael Stern said. Michael got no answers to any of the texts or calls to his daughter. He was out of town in Florida, so Sarah was at home alone, and it was very uncharacteristic for her to not answer calls or texts, but especially for her to ignore her grandmother's calls. Sarah chatted with her grandmother often and always promptly returned her grandmother's missed calls on the off chance that she hadn't been able to get to the phone. But it was more usual for Sarah to not miss calls from her grandmother at all. It was her grandmother who contacted Michael Stern about Sarah's unusual behavior, and Michael, her dad, immediately reached out to Sarah and got no reply. The next day, December 3rd, Michael Stern gets a phone call about a 1994 Oldsmobile 88 that is registered in his name, and it's been abandoned on Belmar Bridge with the keys still inside. This is the car that Sarah drove. The police immediately went to Sarah's house to see if she was home, but all they found was Sarah's dog locked in his crate.
Well, so what was the timeline? So she was last seen on December 2nd.
Yeah, the last anyone heard from her was December 2nd.
And they found the dog when?
December 3rd. And her car was abandoned.
Okay.
The police checked the pizza place where Sarah worked, and the pizza place owner said they last saw her on November 30th when she came to pick up a pizza. Thinking that there might have been a possibility that Sarah jumped off the bridge, the police sent a diving rescue team to search in the Shark River for a potential body, but nothing was found. So, Belmar Bridge is a bridge over a river that runs directly into the ocean, and the river is called Shark River. So, this is where police reach out to Sarah's closest friend, Liam McCasney. Liam was very cooperative and offered quite a bit of information to police, including some information about how Sarah told him that she was suicidal, primarily due to the rocky relationship she had with her father. Liam painted a picture about how Sarah constantly talked about running away to Canada. Liam was the only person police talked to who portrayed Sarah as suicidal. We actually have some of the body cam audio of Liam's first conversation with police. We're going to play it.
When was the last time you talked to her?
I was with her today.
Turn some light on if you don't mind.
I mean, we went to get food today.
And you went to work all the time?
4:30.
Okay, so you haven't talked to her since 4:30? Do you have a cell phone you can reach out to her on?
I actually haven't been able to find my cell phone.
Yeah, do
you watch that? Okay, so that was the first interaction that Liam McCasney had with police, and he says that they went to get food today.
Oh, so he saw her that day.
That's what he's saying, yeah.
On December
3rd.
3rd, okay.
Okay, I have two more clips.
Her mindset last time you talked to her.
I just know she's been trying to get away. You can tell me she's going to Canada.
Trying to get away, okay. Canada, she's been real depressed lately.
Her dad is crazy.
Okay, and then she's dealing with the loss of her mother. She's been different than normal lately?
Well,
and for how long?
In the past, she has had a tendency to have self-destructive, suicidal behavior. I actually know that.
How long ago?
Years ago. Over the past few months, she's been telling me, how bad her relationship with her father is and how she just needs to get out of here.
Why was it bad? What made it bad?
Fighting.
Arguing, fighting?
Arguing, fighting.
So that was Liam McCasney's first interaction with police on December 3rd when they can't find Sarah, her car is abandoned on Belmar Bridge, and they can't find Sarah at her house or anywhere else. So they go to Liam McCasney's house, and Liam says that he saw her that day. They had lunch together. And then he tells police that Sarah has actually been suicidal lately, and she's been wanting to get away, and that the relationship with her dad is just really, really bad right now, right? And at this point, no, I'll save that, actually.
You were going to talk about how you think it's bullshit?
Fuck Liam.
Because, I mean, I don't know where this story is going. This is the first time I'm hearing it, and I haven't read through your outline. So I'm just going to say, just due to my general distrust.
Yeah.
It is odd, like you already mentioned, that none of her other family members, none of her other friends mentioned her being suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, they were closer, so it's possible that she was suicidal and she only confided in him and
yeah.
Not, she wasn't just blasting it to the world, which is normal.
Yeah.
But it's weird. The thing that stands out to me is that she went and got lunch with him. I don't know. It just, the timing seems weird that she would like go out with her friend, they would get lunch, and then immediately she would go to a bridge and jump off of it.
Yeah.
Because if she was feeling suicidal, why didn't he stay with her? If she was feeling suicidal, why didn't she confide in him and try to get help from him? It sounds like what he's saying is she was distraught. They had lunch, and then he was like, "Okay, bye."
Yeah.
Then she went and killed herself. That doesn't make, it just seems weird.
Yeah, and also, I'm thinking about just my own reaction to this. Like, if police came to me after we had hung out and said, "Hannah's missing, and you had confided in me that you were suicidal," my first reaction would be, "Holy fucking shit, I'm terrified that she committed suicide." Like,
yeah.
Is there any way that we can look into this? Did you check in the river yet? Like, have you checked all of these places yet? That would be my first reaction.
He's very emotionless.
Yes, emotionless. And then he's also like, "But she talked about like running away to Canada too." Like, she talked about killing herself, but she also talked about running away to Canada. Like, that would not be my reaction personally at all.
They've been friends longer.
Yes.
They've been friends since elementary school.
Yes.
Like, you would think that his immediate reaction to finding out that his best friend is missing, I mean, I guess he could be going into shock, but it seems weird that he was just like,
Well, it just, if he really thought that she was suicidal and the police are there because they can't find her and her car is abandoned on a bridge, my personal first reaction would be terror. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know how exactly that terror would manifest, but it would be like, "Have you found her? Is there anything I can do? Where can we look?
If I went missing, Kaylee, you would be like, "I'm hopping in my car right now."
Yes.
You would be putting on a scuba suit and you'd be getting in the river.
Yes. I'd be like, "These are all of the Mexican food restaurants that she really liked. We got to check there."
A 100%.
But it wouldn't be like, "I guess she
have you
might
tried
have
checking Canada?"
Yeah. "Have you tried checking oh my god." Yeah, like this is just weird, super weird behavior to me. Like, I would never react this way if my best friend was missing, especially if she had told me that she was suicidal. So the police weren't getting any answers to where Sarah might be, because remember, they immediately sent rescue scuba teams in Shark River to look for her body, and they didn't find anything. They looked at her house, they looked at the places she frequented, they looked at her best friend's house, and they found nothing. But they did discover a security camera across the street from Sarah's house, pointing at her house, right? So they checked the security footage from this camera and discovered that Sarah's car left her driveway around 11:45 p.m. on December 2nd. The security footage can't see who's driving the car. And with nothing else...
How do they not see who's...
I don't know.
You said it's pointing at her house?
Yeah, it's a shitty-ass camera, I guess. And I don't know... I didn't look up where her house is, so I don't know if it's like a business. So it's not like pointing at her house, but it has a view
of her house.
Might just
be peripheral.
Exactly. Either way.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So 11:45 p.m., so almost midnight. So this is the night before they find her car.
Yes.
They just see someone, you said, leave her house?
Yeah, her car
backs out of the driveway. And get into her car.
No, they didn't see anybody get in. Like, there's nothing there. They just see it back out of the driveway. So I'm assuming that the footage was not good enough to be pointed like right at her house to see who was getting in the car, but they see her car backing out of her driveway and leaving.
Okay.
So it's probably closer to pointing toward the street, like a peripheral.
And it never
vision.
Comes back?
Yes, it never comes back.
Gotcha. So his story sounds even weirder.
Uh-huh.
Where was she all night?
Yeah. I don't get the like the lunch thing, and I don't know if he was. So he said in the recording that he had lunch with her that day, but they were talking to him on December 3rd. So, and they discovered...
Like, what time did they interview him? So they're saying, oh yeah, I saw her today.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if he meant December 2nd.
Oh, okay.
And it's possible that it's just murky about that. But I think he is insinuating that he saw her on December 2nd, even though that's not super clear in the recording. So with nothing else to really go on, police organized several searches in the area for Sarah, and Liam and Preston were always in attendance at these searches. Liam was eager to offer any information he had that might help locate Sarah. However, police started to become suspicious of Liam after he said something unnerving while being questioned by police. This is the quote. "If Sarah did jump off that bridge, what are the odds that she's not somewhere all the way out in the ocean by now?" Which is a weird thing to ask. "Putting myself in the shoes of somebody who was terrified that their best friend had committed suicide, that is the last thing that I would want to ask the police. I would be terrified that that was the case, but I wouldn't
You wouldn't put it out there because it's your worst fear.
Exactly.
It makes it sound like he put her in that river and was hoping that she would get washed out to the ocean.
Like he was just testing the waters to see, like, well, maybe my plan is really good, right? Like, I don't know. Just like the police were. At this point, the police were like, this is kind of fucking weird. Like, what a weird fucking thing to say, dude. Are you good? He was not good. Spoiler alert.
You have to cut to, like, the deep voice, dear reader, he was not good.
Yeah, and Liam hadn't asked, like, any questions up to this point about what could be done to find Sarah. And his answers when the police asked him questions, like, he was always really eager to offer information, but his questions were always lacking a bit in, like, detail. And I'm assuming Liam recognized the change in the police's behavior towards him because his parents got him a lawyer pretty quickly, and then he refused to talk to police after this. So
right now, based on just what you've told me, it is really fishy. Whenever police are investigating a missing person or a murder like this, if your prime suspect, a husband, boyfriend, in this case, a best friend, and they're not asking questions, if they're not asking how they can help, mm-hmm. like maybe he's going to the search parties, but if he's not like, what can I do?
Yeah.
You know, how can I find my friend? That is really suspicious.
Yeah, or offering, like, any information. Where did you frequent? Like, where could Sarah possibly be? Like, did she say where in Canada she wanted to go? Like, I don't know. It was just very strange, and he lawyered up. And by all means, like, you should lawyer up if your spouse, best friend goes missing and you're innocent, right? You should lawyer up.
Yeah.
But all the factors at play right here still make it pretty suspicious. So because police started to think they weren't getting the whole truth, they reached out to Liam's friend and roommate, Preston Taylor. Preston basically affirmed Liam's story, but they did get an important piece of the story that Liam seemed to have left out. Sarah went to the bank on the day she disappeared, and she was with Liam. Police checked the security footage and saw Sarah. She was taking money out of the safety deposit box she kept at the bank. She seemed to be her normal happy self. There were no red flag or suicidal behaviors on that footage. I also realized that it wouldn't be likely that we'd see those, like, on a bank security camera. But sometimes, like, you can see erratic, concerning behaviors when someone is suicidal, and they didn't observe that. That wasn't the case that they saw.
What would that even look like? Like, sometimes, like, you're saying if maybe she was having, like, some sort of a schizo episode?
No, like if you're just emotionally done.
Or, like, maybe if she was, like, crying or something?
Crying or just saying weird things or basically...
Or if, like, one of the bank tellers, like, recognized that she was somber.
In distress.
Or,
right? Yeah. Okay. Like, the bank tellers didn't report having any of those kind of interactions with her. They said it was very normal and regular type of interactions, which, again, a lot of people who are suicidal hide it very well. So it's not like just because she had normal interactions with bank tellers doesn't mean she wasn't suicidal. But again,
exactly,
considering
yeah.
all the factors here, something fucky was going on. Something weird was happening. Liam was not in the bank with her. He was waiting in the car. So police went to the bank and accessed Sarah's deposit box at the bank and found $25,000 inside. If Sarah was planning on running away to Canada, like Liam had insinuated, wouldn't it make sense that she would take all her money with her? Why would she leave $25,000 at the bank? And police also discovered Sarah's passport at her home. So she couldn't have gone to Canada without it. Like,
wait, do we know how much she withdrew?
She withdrew about $9,000.
That's a lot. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than she needed just to go out to lunch with her friend.
Yeah.
Wait, what month was this?
December.
Mm-hmm. What if, maybe that was her tuition money.
Oh, that's really possible.
Because December, it would have been the end of the semester.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then she would have been going, because that's usually what happens is you have like a winter break.
Yeah.
And then you start back in January and like the tuition is due for the spring semester, like before you start classes in January.
Yeah.
That's what I'm considering.
It's possible that it was tuition and plus it was like around Christmas time. And she also like frequented an art studio because she did like art exhibitions. And that was probably that probably cost a bit of money to do as well because she needed supplies. And I don't know if she rented out that space. But yeah, that makes sense that she would take out that much money for considering all those potential factors, right? But the biggest thing is her passport was at home. She could not have gone to Canada. So after 2 months of searching for Sarah, her case started to go cold with no further leads until a man named Anthony Curry reached out to police, claiming he knew who killed Sarah. Now, at this point, nobody knows that Sarah's dead for sure. Like, nobody knows that. But he's claiming he knows who killed Sarah. That is very interesting to police right away.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, for lots of reasons.
Okay, who's Anthony?
So Anthony was an aspiring film director, and he went to school with Sarah, Liam, and Preston. So Liam and Anthony knew each other in high school, but had gotten closer over the past 6 months or so and had bonded over their love of music. After Sarah went missing, Anthony immediately became suspicious of Liam because the whole scenario surrounding Sarah was almost identical to a film idea that Liam had pitched to Anthony.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
No.
So I guess on Thanksgiving 2016, Liam laid out this film idea, and the film idea was to kill a girl and throw her over the bridge.
This is insane. No.
Yes, yes. So when Anthony heard about Sarah's car being abandoned on the bridge, right, and Anthony also remembered that Liam was telling him that Sarah had come into a lot of money, like a large inheritance, and he was putting all these pieces together, and he was like, holy shit. I think Liam killed Sarah. So he went to police. And in January, Liam started sending Snapchat messages to Anthony asking to talk about something urgent. So he felt really unsettled about this, and he also felt like he might be in danger. So police essentially worked with Anthony to hopefully get a confession out of Liam at this point, because the police were super suspicious of Liam, but they just didn't have evidence whatsoever to do anything about it. So police set up a, wow, I can't even think of words. Sorry, hold on. Let me look back at my notes.
I have one thing to say. This yes. reminds me of, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is the Susan Powell case, mm-hmm. where people who go on to commit murder, I'm always surprised by how many times a witness says, I was at a Christmas party with her husband, and he casually talked about if he ever needed to get rid of a body, he would throw it down a mine shaft, right? Yeah. And that's what frickin' Josh Powell did, is he was at a Christmas party and was just like joking, and he's just like, you know, it'd be so easy to get rid of a body, you can just throw it down a mine shaft, no one would ever find it. And then his wife went missing, and Liam did something similar where he was like, I've got a great idea for a movie, but it yeah. wasn't a movie, he's just a psycho, and he did the exact same thing that he was planning on doing in his quote-unquote
movie. It's also weird to me, I guess, that Liam was wanting to talk to Anthony so bad. Like, this was eating him up, and he wanted to tell somebody, I guess, is what it sounds like. He was like, I need to talk to you. I need to talk to you. It's really urgent, on Snapchat to Anthony. And Anthony was like, this is really fucking weird, and I feel weird about this.
So he never responded? He wasn't like... No, he didn't respond and say, like, what's urgent? He, like, went to police first and was like, I think he's going to talk to me about the murder?
No, I think he engaged with him and was like, yeah, what's up? And Liam was like, we have to talk in person thing. Yeah.
And so then he got wiretapped.
Kind of. So Anthony went to police, and police set up a secret camera in his car. And it's a good thing they did that and they didn't put a wire on him, because when Anthony went to pick up Liam, before Liam got in the car, he was like, I need to feel you up.
When he patted him down?
Yeah. He's like, I need to feel you up for a wire. He's like, no disrespect, dude. I just got a check. And he felt Anthony up and didn't feel a wire.
You can't blame me for doing this, right? I gotta feel you up real quick, alright? No disrespect. I'll show you. No disrespect, okay?
No. So, Liam gets into the car and just fucking spills. Like, he tells Anthony everything. Like, how he planned Sarah's murder out for the past 6 months. Like, he was planning to kill her for her money. And he tells him...
How was he planning on getting the money? Or to withdraw it first and yeah. then... Because he can't just go into the bank and get it.
He convinced Sarah to take out her lockbox. And he thought that she was going to take out all of the money, but she only took out, like, $9,000. And he didn't know this, right? But he killed Sarah and stole the lockbox, opened it, and discovered there was only $9,000 inside. he thought there was going to be a $50,000 to $100,000 inside.
Well, so, but she already stated that a lot of it was
unusable. Like,
yeah.
Well, I guess he didn't use the brain cell that evolution gave him, because here we are. I have the audio clips, and I'd love to play the audio clips of him confessing to everything, but there is a massive trigger warning because he goes into detail about how he kills Sarah, and it's graphic. Are you ready for that?
Mm-hmm.
She had one safe, and she took money out, and she only had 10 grit. And this money, I don't know if it was brick or something, old money, terrible quality. I don't even know if I can put any of it in the bank.
Right, because it'll probably look sketchy, right?
Look sketchy, and it'll look like it's Sarah's money, especially if it's a federal investigation.
Right.
If they're looking for the guy who has the old money.
Right, because it's probably like the old dollar bills. It's not like the new, because the $100 bills are changed now.
Exactly. No, I didn't even try to do anything with it because it's in such bad shape.
Yeah, you can't even use it.
Like, I need to play low and then maybe, like, tape it up and see if I can put it in the bank.
So where do you have it hidden?
Yeah.
Where'd you hide it?
First it was in my house for a long time, but then I stopped trusting Preston.
Yeah, what's the deal with Preston? Was he...
No, he's cool.
Did he end up, like, helping you or not?
Oh, yeah. Sarah's whole deal was my thing. But I had planned Sarah's situation for me to be interrogated by cops. Like, that was whole part of my plan, to make me look not guilty. Like,
did you end up...
You didn't hear that? It was all over the news.
Oh, good. I didn't know if you, like, went through it.
Yeah. And the worst part is, we threw her off the bridge, and the body never showed up.
It's probably frozen.
It's probably all that we had in the ocean. Yeah. And, dude, all right, so I'm hanging out with her. She has, we went to the bank, she took some money out, not all of her money. We're counting it out, and then she goes to walk out the front door. I choke her out, drag her. My biggest problem was the dog, and her dog laid there and watched as I killed her. Didn't do anything.
Jeez. Nobody was there?
No, nobody was there. Even her dad wasn't there. He was in Florida.
Yeah, you said that he was
there. Yeah, so I have to leave. I dropped my phone at Sarah's house. My phone was at Sarah's house. Like,
wait, you left your phone?
Yeah, I lost it. I couldn't find it. I had to go to work. I had timed everything out. So that...
Why did you take your phone? You should have left it in your pocket.
Dude.
What were you
doing? Strangling someone? I couldn't find it, dude. It ended up being out in the driveway.
Oh, it must have dropped out of your pocket.
It must have dropped when I was crawling to get in the car. I took her out, dragged her into the back, put her in the bathroom, and then I had to go straight to work. So Preston came over, took the body, put it in the bushes, and then I was at work. I had a full... like, night of work, except I left work a couple times, which looks sketchy. I look for my phone, though, which is a reasonable... It's kind of, like, me losing my phone is kind of a good thing, because the cops are like, oh, he's hanging out with her, he lost her phone, his phone, he's going back and forth between his house looking for it. And then I get off work that night, go straight over, Preston and I go over to her house, take her safe, bring that over to my house before we do anything. Then we take... her body out of the bushes and drag it over to her back fence, and I crawl, get into her car, and I back up. She had, there's a security camera across the street. So I had to act like her. I watched her every time she backed out. She does the same thing. So I backed out exactly like she did and drove off.
Put her in the trunk?
Nah, put her in the passenger seat of her own car. And then Preston and I had these walkie-talkies to communicate with. We just used them again. So I was driving, and I had her buckled in the passenger
seat. So she looks like she's just sleeping.
She's just sitting up. My plan was for me, I underestimated my own strength. I got up on top of the bridge to throw her off. My plan was I was going to throw her off, run over, jump over the divider, and get in the Preston's car. And I go up, open the door, unhook her, pull her out, start dragging her to throw her over, and then cars start coming up. I see, like, headlights coming. I try to get her over, and I can't. Leg up. Like, the weight from her body, like, made me fall, and my leg, like, went up. So now I'm lifting my leg, and there's three cars coming up. So I grab her body, dude, I had superhuman strength, and I threw it in the car, and I picked it up, and her feet were up here, and her foot, her head was down there, and three cars go by, and I'm losing my, because that easily could have been a cop.
Yeah.
And then,
I mean, the police station is, like, right there.
Yeah, yeah. And then Preston comes over the bridge, goes around, makes a U-turn, comes up behind me, the two of us throw the body over, and then we grab. I picked her up and had her just, like, dangling off the ground, and she just pissed herself, and
did you lose control of
said my name, and then that was it. And it took me a half an hour to kill her. I thought I was going to be able to choke her out and have her out in, like, a couple minutes. I choked her out, and then she was just laying there having a seizure or something. So then I just, I got a shirt, and I just shoved it down her throat so she wouldn't throw up or anything, and held my finger over her nose and set a timer. That's the only time I had my phone, and it took me like a half an hour after I hit start. It was just a known, it was part of my plan for them to know that we were hanging out, because I needed to make it seem like we were better friends than we actually were, so that they wouldn't question my behavior with her. We gotta play it safe. Anyone?
No, yeah, I understand.
It could be anyone. And I don't want Preston to think that he has to kill you and take you out because you are the only person that knows. Because I've tried to imply that you might know, and he gets really upset. So
maybe don't tell him.
Don't tell him.
Don't tell him.
Yeah, but you're the only person besides Preston that knows. But I told you that in the beginning. That's how it's going to be. I planned this thing out for like 6 months, and I didn't get a lot of money, but I had enough money to just be like living comfortably in my house.
So the murder happened on the night of the 2nd.
It happened on the afternoon. Yeah.
So like he got her to withdraw all that money, which uh-huh. was a lot less than he was anticipating.
Uh-huh.
And he still killed her, even though it was only $9,000.
I don't think he looked at the money until after he killed her.
Okay, that makes more sense. So it was purely selfish. He just wanted the money. That's why he killed his best friend.
Yeah. Yep.
I guess that's just where I'm confused, is that the motive seems weird to me, but I guess some people would murder someone. If I found out that Kaylee came into a large sum of money, my first thought would not be like, I could kill her and take it. What?
Yeah.
I would never have that thought.
Like, and the fact that he... God, and the fact that it's like he planned it for 6 months.
Here's my other problem with this. Why is he telling people? Like, I assume he's just dumb. Like, are he and Anthony even really that close?
No, they're not. So I wanted to talk with you about this because I am so fucking confused. What kind of, this might be like victim blaming, I guess, on Anthony's side. But what kind of person do you have to be for a murderer to like feel safe to share this shit with you? Like... Or maybe it's not that at all. Maybe that's a shitty thing to say.
I wouldn't put it on Anthony. No. I mean, he's the one, he went to the police and he was like, something shady is happening. You need to wiretap me. But
why does Liam need to tell somebody?
I think this is my theory, just based on what little I know about him, is it sounds like he's bragging.
Yeah.
In the confession, when he's telling Anthony, I think he's completely disjointed from reality. It sounds like he doesn't have any kind of sympathy for his friend, his supposed friend, Sarah, that they've been friends since elementary school.
No.
It sounds like he doesn't even see her as a person. It
no.
sounds like he sees her as like a prop in an exciting movie that he wanted to direct. And so he's like, you know who I should tell about my awesome, amazing idea because I'm such a film genius? I should tell Anthony. He's going to get a real kick out of the fact that I actually did this for real. I murdered someone.
Yeah. I don't think it's that, though, because I just don't understand the reason to brag. I don't think it was, like, a brag for, like a movie thing's sake. Like, I don't think he was trying to pass it off like, oh, this is an awesome movie idea. Because that's, I'll tell you later, that's how his defense tried to plead. They tried to paint it as he was just telling him a really cool movie idea he had, right?
Did they really?
Yeah. Like, this wasn't actually what happened. This was just a cool movie idea.
Remember, this is exactly what happened with Jessica Roach's case when freaking Larry Duane Hall, they were like, he wasn't actually a serial killer. He was role-playing as a serial killer.
That's, yep.
He had all of those incriminating things in his van because he liked role-playing as a serial killer.
Which is not any better, any guys. Like, that's just as bad.
I can't. So what happens next? So that wasn't his full confession?
No, I guess I just wanted to do a recap, but I can't find the transcript of everything he said. There were a few things that I was like, I wanted to touch on, I guess. Liam tells Anthony that Sarah's last words were Liam, and she begged for mercy, and he did not show her any. He also says later, and I think I'm going to play that clip too, how he thought this would like change him into like a different person and that he would feel different after killing Sarah, but that he doesn't feel any different at all.
I don't feel any different and I don't think about it. You always think you're going to try these new things and you're going to change.
But it didn't change.
It just doesn't do anything. It's weird.
Like, nothing changed inside of him after killing her. And it's weird because he just thought he'd be a little bit different. But he feels the exact same. Like, nothing changed inside of him after killing her. And it's weird because he just thought he'd be a little bit different. But he feels the exact same. Which points to your, he doesn't feel anything about it. This totally unfeeling. He's like laughing and chuckling when he's talking to Anthony about what he did. Right? How he brutally murdered Sarah with his bare hands. And he even timed it out. Like, he wanted to time how long it would take to kill Sarah. So he opened the timer on his phone. And he timed that it took him like a little bit over 30 minutes to kill her.
Okay, here's the thing that bothers me the most. I mean, actually, it's not what bothers me the most, but one thing that bothers me is that they've known each other over a decade, right?
Yeah.
10, yeah. 15 years. Mm-hmm. Were there not signs? Like, I just want to know how psychopaths like this or sociopaths, whatever he is, how do they have close friendships? Like, did she not pick up on that? Were there not red flags that, like, because I interact with those people, like, I meet people like that and I pick up on it and I'm like, cool, not going to be friends with that person because they're a sociopath.
So
how do they form close friendships?
I'm thinking about my personal experience. I was friends with a group of guys like my senior year of high school, and that they were my only friends my senior year. Because I had a falling out with one of my best friends in junior year. And because of the way I was raised, I guess it was like a standard that there was little to no emotional reciprocity in relationships when you had friendships with boys, right? It was...
Okay. A lot of standards were just really low.
Yeah, a lot of it was surface level. And if there was any emotional intimacy, it was me who was initiating it and me who was solving it. There was just little to no expectation. I did not expect it from them. And when it did happen, because it was often, I mean, it was rare when it did happen, but sometimes it did. When it did happen, I was like, oh my God, we're so close. Right? Like the bar was really low. Yeah. And I was like,
you're like, oh my God, this man is so deep.
Yeah. He showed a human emotion. Yeah, like, it was very, like, I imagine it was a lot like that, where there was little to no emotional intimacy on his side, but he was just kind of there for her, like, physically.
Yeah.
And that was the bare minimum. That was enough to be friendship. And it kind of is what we expect of, like, you know, friendships from men.
Okay, so, no, that makes a lot more sense, yeah.
Maybe there were signs, but especially a young girl, like, looking back now, I can see all the red flags that I missed. But as an 18-year-old, 17-year-old, I was super fucking uneducated. And
no, that's true. She was really young.
Yeah. I also wanted to talk about how weird it was when Liam told Anthony, like, I don't want Preston to freak out and try to kill you now because you know about this. Number one, this was a preventable thing. Like, why would you say that? Why would you tell Anthony? I don't understand. Like, he didn't have to tell Anthony, but he did. And what was the reason? We don't know why. Maybe it's bragging. Maybe it's like some weird, like, I think it was a combination of bragging and like disbelief almost that he's getting away with this and that he feels kind of like a mastermind. Because he mentioned several times, like, I planned for the police to like question me. I wanted the police to know that this happened, right? Like, everything is falling into place type deal. But why would he bring Anthony into it? And then why would he tell Anthony, Preston wants to kill you because you know this information now?
Like, probably because it's dumb. My guess is that we can't wrap our minds around it because it's dumb, Kaylee.
I fully and 100% believe that. Like, I think this man is a fucking moron. Truly. I really think he is. And I think it's extra sad how he thought he was some type of mastermind. Oh, another thing. He talks about, I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows, I guess. So sometime in between killing Sarah and then getting her out to her car to take her to the bridge, he loses his phone at Sarah's house. He goes to work right after he kills Sarah and realizes he doesn't have his phone when he's at work. So he leaves work several times to drive back and forth from his work to Sarah's house to see where he left his phone. Also, another recap. The story of how this happens is Liam takes Sarah to the bank. Sarah withdraws money from the bank. Liam drives Sarah home. Sarah tries to leave the house. He grabs Sarah and strangles her. Sarah dies and he puts Sarah in the bathroom. And then Liam leaves for work. Preston comes by a few hours later and moves Sarah's dead body from the bathroom to some bushes in Sarah's backyard.
So wait, you're saying that, I guess I missed this earlier, they're in cahoots, so Preston and Liam, they're planning on splitting the money?
I mean, I've never seen anything explicitly saying that, but yes.
Okay.
Nothing from Preston's end anyway, but I don't know if Liam
That's the only thing that makes sense, is that he's planning on getting a cut of the money.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not just one psychopath that's friends with her, but two.
Yes! Like, what are the fucking odds? Apparently really high.
You were right from the very beginning when you said you cannot trust your friends, apparently.
No, you fucking can't, especially if they're men. Yeah, so Preston comes later that day and moves Sarah's body from the bathroom to the bushes. Then Liam comes back later that night and he takes Sarah's body from the bushes and he puts Sarah's body in her own car in the passenger side. And he sits her upright and buckles her in. He says it in the confession, he wants it to look like she's sleeping. And then Liam drives Sarah's car to Belmont Bridge and Preston follows. And Liam's plan was he was going to park on, is it Belmont Bridge? Did I say that right?
Belmar?
Belmar Bridge. Liam's plan was to take Sarah to Belmar Bridge, throw her over the edge, leave her car on the bridge, and then get in Preston's car. But in the confession, he talks about how he struggled with the weight of Sarah's body and how putting her over the edge almost took him out with Sarah. So Preston came around and parked behind Sarah's car and helped Liam throw Sarah's body over the bridge.
And okay, then, so they're both guilty of...
Yes. But Liam does say in his confession that this was his whole idea.
That it was Preston's idea?
No, that it was Liam's idea and plan and that Preston was just helping.
Okay. So he respects his friend Preston enough to not throw him, I was going to say under the bus, but doesn't love Sarah enough not to throw her over the bridge.
Apparently. And I don't think that he respects Preston enough. I think that he just wants to take credit for this brilliant plan
exactly.
that he made up, right? It's actually a fucking idiot plan. Oh, yeah. And he kills Sarah. He gets the deposit box and realizes there's only about $10,000 inside. And all of it's extremely badly damaged. So he can't even fucking use it. So
that's what he gets.
Yeah. So he and Preston bury the lockbox because they can't deposit it into the bank. Because like he said it would be suspicious that it would look like Sarah's money. Because it fucking was Sarah's money. Also, I guess kudos to Anthony for playing it so fucking cool that whole time. Like, he really did play it cool. He was asking questions, like he withheld judgment. He made Liam feel safe enough to just spill everything. That probably was really, really scary. Like, I would feel scared.
And when I'm in situations similar to that, like, not that I've had a murderer confess to me, but whenever I feel like I'm in danger, more often than not, I just kind of try and play it cool. Pretend like it's not happening so I don't piss my pants.
That'll either help you in some scenarios or it'll hurt you in other scenarios.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, the art of knowing when to make a scene and when to play it cool is something I haven't mastered yet.
Me neither.
But I think it's important for a lot of people to master. How do we teach a class? When to make a scene, when to play it cool. So police were listening to this confession live, but didn't immediately arrest Liam. They actually went to Preston to get a confession out of him first. Basically, without a body and no physical evidence, even with Liam's confession, it would be hard to fully convict him. So police went to Preston with this information, like saying that they knew what happened, and Preston folded like a fucking paper towel, dude. He told them everything. And then he took them on a walkthrough of Sarah's house to give the cops a play-by-play of what happened to Sarah in the moments before she died and then how they took her body elsewhere. And then they went to the bridge and Preston explained everything that happened there. And then Preston took the cops to the place that they had buried the safe deposit box they stole from Sarah. The day after, on February 2nd, 2017, police arrested Liam McCaskey and found the key to Sarah's safe deposit box in his car. So that was a really good piece of physical evidence, just tying everything together with a bow. The fact that the key was in his car.
So Preston didn't try and lie at all.
No. I mean, he did withhold information from police because he talked to police before and corroborated Liam's first story. So he lied. When the police confronted him, he was like, okay, I'm not going to try and lie my way out of this one. At this point, most of the community didn't even know that there was a criminal investigation open for Sarah's case. They were all under the impression that she was still just missing. Not that she was presumed dead, and definitely not suspicious that she had been murdered by her supposed best friends. So this really, really shocked the community. Especially the fact that Liam and Preston were Sarah's best friends, right? Like, since elementary school. Preston entered a plea deal to testify against Liam, so he would plead guilty to robbery, conspiracy to commit robbery, tampering with physical evidence, and two counts of hindering apprehension, and in exchange, police dropped charges for accessory to murder. So Preston was sentenced to 18 years in prison, and he will be up for parole in 2032. Liam McCaskey was convicted of first-degree murder, first-degree felony murder, first-degree robbery, second-degree desecration of human remains, second-degree conspiracy, second-degree hindering apprehension. The jury added on an aggravating factor, which increases the penalty for murder from 30 years to life without parole. Liam never confessed to police and pleaded not guilty. The defense tried to argue that Liam was just telling Anthony a cool movie idea he had. And apparently Liam's mom wants to die on the hill that her son is innocent.
No!
Yes, she maintains to this day that her son is innocent.
So she thinks, let me get this straight, okay? She and Liam are trying to argue that her son's recorded confession was an idea for a movie that just so happened to coincidentally
line up with the disappearance of his best friend.
Yeah, line up perfectly with the disappearance of his best friend whose car was left at the top of a bridge.
That's a little too suspicious for me. Ladies, do not let ever...
That's more than suspicious.
Do not ever let love blind you like this, even for your own son.
Yeah, no, you know me. Nah. Yeah.
Oh, no, I wasn't talking to you. That was just a general PSA. For everyone.
Yeah, just in general, no. No, that's bullshit. I'm sorry.
Agreed. Hard agree. You have anything else to say?
You should do the sign-off in a Russian accent.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Crime Suit Podcast. Be sure to find us on social media and let us know your thoughts on this case. You can find us on TikTok at Crime Suit Podcast and Instagram and Twitter at crime_soup. I have no idea if I'm doing it right.
No, you are. Good job. Keep going. This is gold.
You're going to do the whole thing?
Yeah.
Are we going to leave the sign off for this episode in a Russian accent?
Yes.
Oh my God. Just no
Why'd
warning.
You stop.
Okay. We also have a website, crimesuitpodcast.com. Where you can listen to all of our episodes and buy your very own Crime Suit merch. As always, we'll see you next Tuesday. Stay safe and bon appetit. I don't know how to say bon appetit in a Russian accent.